Blog Talk Radio.
At Firefly Willows, LIVE, we're working hard to be your trusted source for fun, enlightening, and heart-centered information and community. And we're passionate about the art of transformative media, the new leading edge of communication in our highly connected, media-rich world. If you're passionate about facilitating change and you have gifts or ideas you'd like to share, come join us. Host a show or be a guest or connect us to an amazing speaker or teacher whose message is too good to miss. There's always room for courageous, knowledgeable change makers, inspired artists, and new ideas. Let us know you're interested. Send an email to info@fireflywillows.com. We're Firefly Willows, LIVE, helping you find and shine your inner light. Firefly Willows, LIVE presents Healing Conversations, featuring your host, Mildred Lynn McDonald.
Welcome, everybody. We're here for our weekly roundtable, and this week I'm in Nova Scotia, Canada. I'd like to welcome to the table Heisey Luttimers.
Hello.
John Caracella.
Good morning.
And Deb Caracella.
Hello.
En route to Cape Breton Island, I happened to find a book, and the book was about happiness and a lady's journey on finding happiness. And she happens to be an analytical from New York and used the opportunity to explore a lot of philosophers and a lot of philosophies and her own life. And I was reading the book, and on page 72, I came across this quote. And the quote really hit me, so I wanted to offer that to our listeners and also to Heisey and John and Deb for a little bit of exploration. Now, the quote goes like this: "The chief happiness for a man is to be what he is." So what I'd like to throw out is, what do these words mean to you? And I'll say them once more for our listeners. The chief happiness for a man is to be what he is. Who'd like to tackle that one? John, were you not just bragging that you could handle it easily?
No, sure. Mildred Lynn, you know, the quote from Erasmus reminded me of a quote from another philosopher, Spinoza, who said, "To be all one is capable of being, and to become all that one is capable of becoming, is the only end of life." So, and I think about that quote very often, and it's an interesting little bit of counterpoint to Erasmus, because I thought being and becoming were the same. It turns out that I was really good at becoming, but I was really bad, really uncoordinated, and really, really ineffective at being. So I'm actually exploring the space of being where there's no obligation to do anything more. There's no obligation to evolve into something more, you know, to do it deliberately or to set a goal, but rather to just to fall into and try to be in harmony with what I am at the moment, you know, current state of affairs of John, and explore that as a place of fulfillment and happiness. And I got to tell you, it's not very easy for me. And I think it's because one of the things that is intrinsically, inherently true about me, that what I am is someone who is always consciously becoming, seeking. So I'm a seeker. And so I get into this really funky place where, am I being or am I becoming? Because they're actually not the same thing. But I'm trying to allow that part of my being is the fact that I love becoming. So in a way, I'm always happy because I'm always being what I am, which is somebody who's in process. And in a way, I'm always restless because I'm always not satisfied with who I am in the moment because I'm always striving to become.
That's interesting, because I have a totally different take on it.
I knew you would.
My take on it is, the chief happiness for a man is to be what he is. And from my perspective, it's talking about being yourself rather than trying to be someone else or meet someone else's expectations. And I know the person that's going to set it straight is High C. So High C, what do you feel?
Well.
No pressure, High C.
I think it's ironic you come to me to be the one to set you straight, but...
I use the word liberally.
Oh, you elitist. Well, first, in listening to what John was saying, I think that being is the only way that we can become. I don't think we can do anything to become something versus we just have to be it. And so, and I'll tie this into what you said in a second, Mildred, because on the one hand, think how often people suddenly stop for a moment in their lives and they go, look at who I've become. And whether that's they're acknowledging something in a positive way or acknowledging something in something they're not happy about, they didn't set out to become that. They just realized they had become that because of who they were being up to that point. And so I think that what you were saying, Mildred, is also true of not trying to be somebody else. Because I also think about people that, you know, when you hear people say, I see all sorts of books and workshops about, you know, who am I? And people always ask that question or going off to find myself. And I would look at this quote and say, but you already are who you are. So just sit with that and allow that to be who you show to the world, rather than looking at somebody else and saying, look at who they are. How can I be that? And that's what I think this quote's really saying, like you were saying, Mildred, is to not compare or try to be what you see someone else being, versus simply allowing yourself to accept who you are and then live that authentically in the world without thinking that somehow there's something flawed or there needs to be something changed about that for it to be what you're supposed to be in the world. And that's what people have to let go of, because happiness is not when we're worried about supposed to be, versus, as the quote says, happiness is when we simply are or allow ourselves to be who we are.
I feel that the quickest road to being unhappy is trying to be someone else other than yourself, simply because perhaps your sole purpose is not the same as the person you may strive to be like.
And not just trying to be like somebody else, but also trying to be what you think other people want or need you to be.
Exactly.
And I think that's where that separation from happiness happens for a lot of people, is they assume this is what this person or this situation or this part of the world needs me to be, so I'm going to try to be that or present that, even though that's not really who I am. And then people wonder why they're not happy. And as this quote indicates, it's because you're not allowing yourself to just be you. And people are afraid of rejection or judgment or, you know, and I think even on a more mundane level, people might think about worrying that they'll be fired from a job or something like that if they simply are themselves rather than who they think the people want to see. And for me, I think that being yourself is much more important than worrying about whether you'll get fired or something. And I know that's a tricky thing to say, because people need a job, but then they think they'll never find another job, but we won't go into all of that. But I think that people don't realize they actually are, and this is really, I think, the source of it for me from this quote. People don't realize that they're the source of their own unhappiness by not accepting themselves, seeing themselves, and allowing themselves to be who they are in the world, rather than there being some external source or something that has to happen on an external basis for their happiness to be there.
I like that. I like that a lot. Now, Deb, do
yes.
you want to tie this all up in a bow for us?
Gee, I'm not sure that I can do that, but I do know that when I read the quote, I
basically came at it from this very, very similar perspective of the one that you and High C have.
Why am I always the weird one?
You're not the weird one. I understood what you were saying, because it's actually not that different from the point of view that High C and Mildred have just illuminated for us. It's you simply are looking at it from your internal perspective as opposed to the external perspective. People, as High C and Mildred have pointed out, for what many reasons and all kinds of circumstances, have not allowed themselves or attuned themselves to understanding who they are at their core, and allowing themselves to feel that that has merit and worth and value. And because of that, and because of the pressures of your parents, of your teachers, of your society that you live in, the rules and regulations of how one is supposed to do, we become confused. And it's very easy to lose sight of who and what you really are within yourself. Now, there may be aspects of oneself that you wish to work on, that you wish to, you know, not necessarily improve, but maybe understand better or to explore more. And I think that's a part of understanding who you are internally and intrinsically, and then finding that, doing that exploration can perhaps lead to peace and ultimately happiness.
I like that too. Well put, Deb.
Thank you.
So I'd like to thank John and Deb and High C for their insights on happiness. And I'll just read the quote once more. The chief happiness for a man is to be what he is.
That applies to women too, by the way.
Of course. Okay, let us take a moment to rewrite the quote. Thank you, Deb.
No
problem. The chief happiness for a man or woman is to be what he or she is. And I also like another quote that says, be yourself, everyone else is already taken. So on that note, I'd like to thank John and Deb and High C for being here today for our weekly roundtable. And please stay tuned for the rest of the show. I hope you enjoy it. Bye for now.
Well, that's our roundtable for this week. Many thanks to Mildred Lynn McDonald and participants Deb and John Carosella and High C. Lutmers. We hope you found this roundtable discussion engaging and thought-provoking. If you would like to join the conversation, visit facebook.com/fireflywillows and add your comment under this week's roundtable post. Stay tuned. Yes, we've added to our lineup of lively, thought-provoking shows, but don't forget our original Sunday morning lineup at 10:30 a.m. Join us for Healing Conversations with Mildred Lynn McDonald every first Sunday. Revolution with High C. Lutmers every second Sunday. Convergence with John Carosella every third Sunday. And our popular on-air call-in show, the fourth Sunday of every month. We're excited. Give us a listen as we continue to create new and entertaining ways for you to shine your inner light. Join us at Firefly Willows, LIVE.
Hello, this is Mildred Lynn McDonald, and I'm your host for Healing Conversations, live from Nova Scotia, Canada. We hope that you're enjoying the show today. Solar energy. Have you thought about it lately? If yes, you'll love our chat with California-based solar energy expert Robert Seton. For many years, Robert led a team of engineers at the largest solar distributor in the United States. Then he created Solar Hybrid Design to honor his deeply held belief that energy must be sustainable and renewable for everyone for a healthy global future. Why is solar energy important? What is the best solar system for your home? What does it cost? What are the short and long-term benefits? What's the future of solar energy, and how does it help the planet? Robert will be answering all these questions, plus offering practical tips, real-life examples, and top-notch resources based on his many years of experience. This is Mildred Lynn McDonald. Thank you so much for joining us today. And without further ado, let's welcome Robert Sutton from Healdsburg, California, and learn everything that we can about solar energy. I'd like to welcome everybody to the show today. We are here with Robert. Robert's in Healdsburg, California, and he is going to tell us everything you want to know about solar energy and more. Welcome, Robert.
Thank you, Mildred. I'm going to tell you some things about energy and solar, yes.
So what is solar energy, and why is it so important to us, especially now?
Well, solar energy is this free energy that comes from the sun. That's just, there's so much power there. In every square meter of sunlight, an average of about 1,000 watts per square meter. Now, how much is 1,000 watts? A hairdryer, for example, uses something like 1,000 watts. If you're pedaling hard on a bike, like really hard on a bike, you might be producing 200 watts or so. Lance Armstrong might produce 400 watts. And in every square meter, there's 1,000 watts of energy. And that energy is free. I read a book recently, I believe it was Deep Economy. And in the introduction, Robert Kennedy, a rabid environmentalist, compared our energy use to our history of food gathering in the world. And he said that for millions of years, we were hunter-gatherers of food. And then when we learned how to harvest food through agriculture, our population just boomed. And he compared that to our use of energy. We've been hunter-gatherers in energy. We've been gathering firewood and then coal and oil and gas. And all of those are accumulated energy. When we start harvesting energy, then we're going to start really changing the way we live and not be affecting the environment in the way that we are, which is horrible. the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere just passed 400 parts per million, and the consensus of climate scientists believe that it should be no more than 350 parts per million for a stable climate that's something like what we have.
I remember a little earlier we were talking, and I was asking you about the term passive building or passive energy, and you gave me an excellent example or a point to really think about that stuck with me. With our building design, we pump energy into the building or take energy away through air conditioning, and there may be a better way of doing things.
Yes, passive energy design of buildings is basically designing buildings in a way that they don't use as much energy, and that can be a whole lot of factors. For example, if you get natural light into a building, then you don't have to have electric lights on, or you reduce the amount of electric light that you need. If you have good insulation so that you don't get the heat coming into a building that you then have to extract, then you're going to use less energy. If you have overhangs on the windows to stop the sun coming in when you don't want it, then that's going to reduce the energy consumption. So buildings consume 40 or 50% of the energy in the world. So the smarter we build them, the less energy we're going to be using. And then we can then, of course, produce energy like with solar panels. So there are two ways actually of using solar energy. One is in the form of heat, and that's broadly called solar thermal, using the heat of the sun. And that can be used to heat water in a domestic hot water or commercial hot water system. Very simple technology and very effective. In fact, quicker payback than solar electric systems, which we'll get to in a minute. But solar thermal is very effective and very obvious way to use solar energy. In Australia, it's part of the building codes now to require that new construction includes solar thermal water heating. In China, 30% of houses, I believe, have solar hot water built in. It's really obvious way, and a huge opportunity in America to do that, all around the world, in fact. The other way that we can use that solar energy is to convert it directly into electricity through solar electric panels or photovoltaics. So we can convert solar energy directly into electricity through solar electric panels or photovoltaics, making volts from solar, from the sun. And those panels typically use silicon wafer, that is the same kind of silicon, highly purified and treated in the same way as computer chips are, to make a device that will convert solar energy into electricity directly. And there are other technologies that we're using different chemicals in a similar way. They produce DC power. So those solar panels are connected together, or they can be connected individually to what's called a solar inverter. And that inverter is an electronic box of tricks that converts the DC power from the solar panels into AC power, which is the type of power we have in our homes and businesses and is distributed through our power grid from our utility. That alternating current power is what we use. So we take the power from the solar panels and, if you like, push that into the grid. So it's pushed into the grid at your home or in a business or in large commercial systems through an inverter. That inverter can be a tiny one or a huge one. And that regulates and controls the power going into the grid. Now, the grid needs to be there in order for that device to operate. So if the grid goes down, if you have a blackout, without extra equipment or special equipment, you don't have any power available. So in your home system or business system, if you have solar, if the grid goes down, you don't have any power unless you have additional equipment. And probably in the future, we'll talk about options in that regard, because in some areas, there are big storms happen, like on the East Coast or the Midwest. People often want to have backup systems. But in the majority of places, what we usually say is, if the power goes out, what you want is a bottle of wine and a candle.
I know our listeners are grasping the importance and the magnitude of solar energies and the potential. They're sitting there, they're saying to themselves, I'm interested in solar energy for my home, but I really don't know where to start. What would your guidance be, Robert?
I think the first thing is to educate yourself somewhat about how does this work. Well, and yes and no. If you're interested, find out about how it works, or just talk to local suppliers and shop around. There are many different ways that you can put solar on your house or business. The first one is you buy the equipment through a local installer. You buy the system from them and have them install it, so you own it. So that's one way of doing it, and it's not cheap, but there are rebates available. In the USA, there's a federal tax credit of 30%. There are various subsidies available that vary greatly across the different states. Some states don't have any programs, but there are more and more of them that are having programs to give rebates and tax relief, etc., to encourage the installation of solar. But educate yourself about what is available. The other way to go is to have a loan, and I live in Sonoma County, and we have a loan scheme here, which was developed in Berkeley in the Bay Area, and that is where you borrow money and it's paid off with your land taxes, and that loan stays with the house. So it's not a personal loan, it's a loan against your property, if you like. And you pay it off with your rates. The other way to go is with a lease. And I was reminded that when cars became available, you know, freely, they were very expensive and not many people had them. And it wasn't until financing for cars became available that many, many people got cars. And nowadays, it's, you know, it's commonplace for people to finance their cars. They don't buy cars. They're an expensive thing, and like solar is. Not cheap to have solar, but you can finance it, as I said, through loans, and you can also lease. But I think it's really important to compare different suppliers and compare buying to leasing or to having loans to make sure that you get the best deal that you can, because just the fact that you do save money isn't necessarily the best deal. So compare as you would, you know, buying a car or buying anything, buying a home. Compare what you can get and look carefully at the long-term overall benefit. And consider that if you own a system, it's going to be producing power for you for could be 30, even 40 years. Now, the inverter may need changing after, you know, 15 years or so, but, you know, that's the typical kind of life of an inverter, but that's just one part of it. So it can last a very long time. Whereas with a lease, you lease it for a period of time, and then you either renew the lease or they may take the system off the roof. So looking at it in the long term, I think, is really important. One thing that is interesting is that most systems that people install don't make their bill zero. So that, in other words, people don't always put on a system that would zero their power bill. Reducing your power bill is the biggest bang for the buck, because power bills are tiered. And so the first energy you use is the cheapest, and the more energy you use, the more expensive it is. So reducing the more expensive energy is the most economical, the best payback. In California, the average size system is about 5 kilowatts.
What does that mean?
That would be 5 kilowatts. That's 5,000 watts of solar panels. And that would cost in the order of $25,000 to $35,000 or so to buy that system without any rebates. Now, the rebates reduces that cost. So that's why it can be very attractive to have a leasing arrangement or to have a loan, a low-interest loan that gets paid off with your rates, for example. But there are different deals that are available. So I would stress shopping around with your local suppliers of solar system.
When you're considering purchasing a solar energy system, are there factors that you need to look at, such as, I live in a really cloudy area, or the winter lasts 5 months of the year, or I have sunny weather all year round, anything like that that we need to look at?
Yes, your solar installer will be able to estimate the amount of energy that your system would be able to generate. Now, the factors there, obviously, where you live, what the weather patterns are. The amount of energy that your system could produce is pretty much quantifiable by, you know, the weather patterns there. The other variables are shade around your house. So if you have trees that are in front of where you could put solar panels, that's going to greatly reduce the amount of energy. But your solar installer will be able to estimate the amount of energy your system would produce, and they should show you a cash flow projection based on that generation and on the cost of the system and the cost of money, and be able to show you what your cash flow would be over the next 30 years.
Now, can you give us an example of an installation cost? I know you're in California, so your numbers would probably reflect that, but just to give our listeners a ballpark idea of what they're looking at.
Well, around $5 to $7 is a typical kind of range, but that's the cost of installation. And then from that, there's the federal tax credit of 30%, and then there are local rebates that can reduce that. And depending on where you are and what the rebates are, that can be quite a substantial reduction. Five system, which is the average size in California, that would be $25,000 to $35,000 before rebates.
And what would that get you? So I'm looking at a system. What are the components of the system?
The components are the solar panels themselves, mm-hmm. and they get installed onto, and there are various, you know, mounting systems. Typically, rails are used, that is, extruded aluminum rails with mounting feet that get bolted into your roof, and then the solar panels get put on top of those and clamped down onto those rails. And you can have systems that look, some look really nice, some don't look quite as nice. Black solar panels, for example, are often used where people want to have it look nice, and whereas the silver ones tend to stand out and not quite as, you know, blend in quite as much. So, you know, it depends on where they're installed and they're visible or not. I'm going to be installing solar panels on my house in the not-too-distant future, and I live on the corner of two streets, and the solar will be facing directly onto that street. And so I'm going to use solar panels with black frames that will look really nice on that on a dark colored roof. The solar panels, the racking system that holds it onto the roof, and then they can be put on the ground if you're on a farm or something and you have space. You can actually have ground mounted structures, and that's how the very big arrays are done on the ground with pole frames and what have you. But typically they're put on the roof, and in, you know, the northern hemisphere they face south. Ideally due south, but they can face any direction really, but you don't get quite as much energy if you're facing south as you do facing east or west. But that can all be taken into account by the installer to determine the amount of energy that the system would produce. So with the solar panels comes the inverters. There are miniature inverters, or micro inverters they're called, that you have one behind each module on the roof. And then there are systems where you have all of your modules on the roof that are wired down to a single inverter, or several of them, could be, that's mounted on a wall. And that then connects to the grid, to the utility, and pushes that energy into the grid. And you can have monitoring systems that allow you to see how much energy is being produced by those solar panels. In fact, you can have ones that will show you on your computer over the internet what every single solar panel on the roof is producing at that moment, and in fact, how much energy is produced over its lifetime, how much energy it produced yesterday. Now, a lot of people actually look at that intensely for the first month or two. They lose interest. But anyway, there are monitoring systems available so you can see, you know, what's happening, and also detect if there's a fault somewhere, or if there's a, you know, a big bird poop on the solar panel that reduces its power output, and so it's time to get up there and clean it off.
So, Robert, once the solar system, solar energy system, is installed, in terms of maintenance costs, what would people be looking at?
Very little cost. Really, all they need is just to be cleaned regularly, and that might be every 6 months or 12 months. It depends on how much deposit of dirt and dust gets on, and that depends on your locality and if it's dusty, how often it rains. But basically it's just cleaning the solar panels so that they're, you know, able to get all the energy that they can. And that can be very simple. You can get spray, high pressure jet, and window cleaner type additive to it can help clean off the solar panels. And a lot of people don't clean their systems for a long time. The cleaner it is, the more energy you have, but that's a very minor cost. Aside from that, there really is no maintenance.
If someone was going to clean the solar panels, is that something you could do yourself, or is it something that you would hire someone to do?
I'm going to be cleaning mine myself, and what I'm going to use is a window cleaner type bottle on the end of the hose that has a frothy detergent that loosens up the dirt that's stuck on glass. I think that's going to be quite effective at cleaning them down.
Robert, what are the short-term and the long-term benefits?
There's a benefit actually in putting solar panels on your roof in that it reduces the amount of heat that gets to your roof. So it reduces the amount of heat that comes into a building. It reduces your electricity bill by generating power, so it reduces the amount of energy that you need to take from the grid. And it reduces the amount of electricity that needs to be generated in the grid. And at the moment, well, it used to be that 50% of our energy came from coal, It's now down, I believe, to 30-something percent of our energy in the United States comes from coal-fired power plants. Coal-fired power plants put out not only carbon dioxide, but they also put out mercury and arsenic and a whole lot of other chemicals, aside from the smog and irritants and nitrous oxides and what have you that contribute to asthma and ill health. They say that in the United States, about 30,000 people die every year as a result of the pollution of our power generation system.
That's a lot of people.
There's, you know, a lot of downside to the power systems that we have powering our electricity systems in the developed world. Coal produces a lot of adverse effects that we have tended to just accept as, well, you know, that's all we can do. We need the jobs. We need the electricity. What else can we do? We can use solar electric systems on our houses, in large-scale systems, small-scale systems, commercial, residential. Solar energy is also used in, as I said before, in solar thermal systems. It's also used in large power stations to produce power by taking the heat, making steam with that, and driving turbines to generate electricity. There are plants all around the world that do that, another way of using solar energy. I think it's really important for us to transform our energy systems, because the greenhouse gas emissions that we're putting into the atmosphere have had the level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere go way too high. The majority of climate scientists agree that around 350 parts per million is a safe level for our atmosphere to not disrupt the weather patterns in the world too much. Now, we're at 400 parts per million. We have to not only reduce our consumption of our production of greenhouse gases, and carbon dioxide is the biggest one, we have to reduce the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Plant trees. Create ways of taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, I believe. But anyway.
Yeah, I'm with you too. Now, let's say you have your solar system, your solar panels installed. They're nice and shiny clean because you've been up there and you've cleaned them all. And then you decide, I'm going to add a piece on my house. Can you add new components to your existing solar panel system?
Yes. You know, depending on how much more you want to add, you know, you could have an inverter that has capacity that's greater than what you initially installed. You could add more solar panels within the capacity of the inverter. Or if you had the microinverters, where you have an inverter behind every solar panel, you can simply add one, two, you know, as many as you want. And they can be in different directions. There are a number of advantages in the microinverters, in that each one is an independent power generation system, and they can be in different directions, and there's no downside to that. Where you have an inverter with a whole lot of solar panels connected to it, they all need to be facing the same direction, or else you don't get the, you know, maximum amount of power generated. So there are restrictions, but yes, you can certainly add to it. You could add another inverter, and there are ways of doing that addition for sure.
Robert, here's a question I should have asked you earlier. How long does it take to install a system? Let's say you make the decision to install a solar system on a Monday morning. You're doing your research with retailers or installers. You've gathered all your information. How long does this project take? Is it days, weeks, months?
Well, it sometimes can take months. And the reason for that, well, so it depends on the kind of system that you get. If you have a lease versus buying, you may need to arrange for financing, that kind of thing. Once that's arranged and you say, okay, yes, I want this, there's a process that needs to go on to get approval to put a system on a house, so that your local building department wants to see where it would be installed, how it would be installed, and they want to make sure that it's going to stay on the roof, that it's going to be connected properly to the roof so that you don't have solar panels flying around the place, and that it's connected properly electrically. So it typically requires the submission of a set of plans to the utility, and there are encouragement to speed up that process to have this flow smoothly. But it can take some time for that approval process. And then the materials need to be gathered together. And again, that will depend on the dollar, their ability to do that, and do they bring those materials in from far, or do they have them ready to go? Quite some time. It can take several months to get a system on your roof. The actual installation might only take a day. It depends on the size, variables, but it might only take a day or two to actually install the system on the roof.
And it's always good to remember that this is something that you're going to have on your house for 30 to 40 years. So when you're looking at a little bit of research time or other stuff that you need to do to have your ducks lined up to actually install the system, it's time well spent up front in the planning stage.
Absolutely. If you're buying a car for $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, you probably want to make sure that you're getting the right one, and one that's going to work for you, and that the finances, payments and what have you, are going to work and all of that. And the same thing with buying a solar system. And unlike buying a car, it's pretty routine. Buying solar, you know, is new to us, and there are a lot of different suppliers out there, and quite frankly, some of them are sharks. As I said, shop around. Be very careful in comparing and contrasting all the different offers. As I said, you may want to look at leasing, local loans, low interest loans that are tied to your rates, or purchasing in cash.
You're a wealth of information and a wealth of experience, and you're obviously very motivated and passionate about solar energy. Do you have any good tips or resources to share with our listeners?
A friend of mine co-authored a book called Got Sun, Go Solar. And that's a really good introduction to how solar works. Just a small book of less than $15, I believe. You can get it on Amazon. That's a great introduction if you want to educate yourself about solar. What other resources? There's a website called Desire USA, DSIRE USA.org, that will tell you what rebates and incentives there are in different states around the United States. What else is there? Ask. If you, you know, see a solar installation in your neighborhood, go and knock on the door and ask them, what was their experience? Were you happy with the installation, and who did the installation? Look around. The solar industry is expanding all the time. But as I said, be careful, because there are sharks out there, you know.
And what do you see as the future of solar energy? We're here, we're talking about the present, we're going to install it into our homes. And I imagine that you've had a nice cup of tea or coffee and thought about, where is all this going?
Well, you know, I think where our energy system is at the moment clearly isn't working. The carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, the pollution from coal-fired power plants primarily, although gas plants are second best or second worst. You know, there's a lot of downsides to our power system as it is right now. It's having health outcomes that are not good. As I said, 30,000 people dying every year is one estimate. I see that improving. I think we can only improve that by, and I think solar energy is going to be a big part of that. At the moment, I think it's less than 2% of our energy in the United States comes from solar electric systems. And in Germany recently, last summer I think it was, at one point in the day, 50% of the energy in Germany was coming from solar electric systems at one instant. Now, the total amount of energy that's consumed there, that translates to, I think it's something like 20% of the energy came from solar. But at one particular moment, 50% of their energy came from solar. And so we've got a long way to go in getting much more of our energy coming from solar. But the speech by Barack Obama, where he said, we've got to change this, you know, and he's committed to America changing this. Now, there's a lot of inertia there. There's a lot of vested interest in what we have right now. But I think we've reached a turning point, in at least in America, that a lot of the rest of the world has already said, okay, that's what we need to do, and they're doing it. I think we've reached a turning point in the United States. And we've got a lot of work to do.
What about in Australia? Are you familiar with solar energy in Australia, since you're from Australia?
I am from Australia. Well, when Judith and I left Australia 11 years ago now, there was very little solar there. now it's a booming industry, and the government's committed to it. In fact, they've got a tax on carbon now, something that we need here that would really help drive renewable energy industry greatly. You know, taxing the things we don't want to have and not taxing the things we want to encourage is an obvious way to get what we want and stop doing what we don't want. Australia, the solar industry is booming, and as it should be. Lots of sun there. Thermal as well.
What about on a personal level? I love to ask this question. We've talked a lot about solar energy and how to install it and what to look for and the benefits overall, but what about something from your heart? Like, what is your personal view on how solar energy would help your health and well-being or the health and well-being of the planet? Because I know that this is an area that's also very precious to you.
It is. I'd like to say that the future is going to be better than it's been, that we have less pollution, that we're using less energy, and that's leading to less pollution, and that we actually see that we could actually be sustainable. At the moment, what we're doing on the planet is not sustainable. And that's where I want to be. I want to be on a planet that's environmentally sustainable, spiritually fulfilling, and socially just as well. And we're not there yet. And I think solar energy is part of creating that future. The United Nations has said that they believe that electricity in the developing world, and they see renewable energy as the way to do that, is one of the things that's needed to achieve the Millennium Development Goals of reduction in poverty that will lead to health, education, clean water, immunization, all of those things. Electricity can be part of bringing those about. And that's the kind of world I want to live in.
Ditto. Standing ovation. Now, if someone wanted to get a hold of you, Robert, you're so nice and you're so knowledgeable. As I said earlier, you're passionate about solar energy. Is there a website or an email address?
I'm a solar consultant. Mm-hmm. I do the design of primarily off-grid systems and battery backup systems is where I have my focus. But I've been designing solar power systems for over 10 years now. So I have a website which is solarhybriddesign.com. And on that website, you can contact me.
Excellent. And can you mention the name of that book again that you referenced earlier?
Got Sun? Go Solar.
So it's Got Sun? Go Solar. And it's available on Amazon. And the author is?
Doug Pratt is one of the authors.
Okay.
If you just Google Got Sun? Go Solar, it'll come up in Amazon.
And the most important question of all, Robert, will you come back to the show?
I would love to.
And what would you like to talk about next time?
Well, as I said, the focus of my work is design of off-grid systems and battery backup systems. Systems I guess I'm most proud of are a village system in remote Mexico, where we installed a power system there of about 70 kilowatts of solar in this remote village, 3 hours down a dirt road, and that's now powering that village. I've been designing power systems for some schools and villages in Africa and in the Philippines and in the Caribbean, and I really enjoy the challenge of developing some of those power systems and tailoring them to the requirements that are there.
I have one final question. Talk a little bit about solar energy in the context of efficiency. What does that look like?
Well, if you're using a certain amount of energy, you can add solar and reduce that amount of energy. A more economical way would be to reduce your energy use as well as solar. And the payback on reducing your energy use can be better than installing solar. So, you know, wasting energy and then covering it up with generating solar is not a very efficient way to do things. Reducing your energy consumption, that can be by having a more efficient refrigerator. Refrigerators have become very much more efficient in the last couple of years. So changing to a more efficient refrigerator can greatly reduce your energy consumption in a house. And then instead of having a $30,000 system on your roof, you may only need a $20,000 system on your roof to do the overall same effect by spending maybe $5,000 on new appliances. So energy efficiency can go very well together with solar and is actually a better investment than solar.
I really like that because it sounds like once you start learning about solar, you're going to have new eyes to start looking at what you're using solar energy on, and it's a good opportunity to revisit all of your appliances.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, being aware of what we use has us gives us then the ability to be able to reduce our consumption. So being aware of the lights, turning them off. There is an effect that you can have sometimes, and apparently this is often the case with solar thermal, that people put a solar thermal system on their house to heat their hot water, so they think they can have long showers, and they can end up using more energy because they use all of the energy that they have from the solar thermal system, and then they cut in the booster to use more energy because they think they're getting all this free energy, whereas they're actually paying for it in the investment in the equipment to be able to generate that energy.
That sounds like when a person eats non-fat or non-sweetened cookies.
Right.
Think they can have more. I really like that analogy. Thank you very, very much for being on the show. I know our listeners have gotten so much out of your kind conversation, your healing conversation, and you have a wonderful evening in Healdsburg.
Well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure being on the show.
And we'll have you back soon.
As promised, we're always thinking of ways to bring you a fresh new perspective. Check out this lineup of our newest shows. The Amethyst Oracle, Divination with a Queer Twist, featuring Firefly Willow's LIVE favorite, Heisey Luttmers, and his co-host, Charlie Harrington, on the second Tuesday evening each month. A Shamanic Life, hosted by John Carosella, on the first and third Tuesday evenings each month. The brand new Embracing Change, The Joy of a New Path, with career coach Ivan Teams and John Carosella, the fourth Tuesday evening of each month. What's Your Prescription for Balance, with Mildred Lynn McDonald and her co-host, Dr. Glenna Calder, the first Thursday afternoon each month. And Evolve, with Robin White Turtle Lisney, the third Thursday afternoon each month. We're excited. Give us a listen as we continue to create new and entertaining ways for you to shine your inner light. Join us at Firefly Willows, LIVE. Thank you for joining us. This program was brought to you by Firefly Willows, LIVE. We hope you enjoyed the show. This is Deb Carosella. Please join us next time on Firefly Willows, LIVE for Revolution with Heisey Luttmers. Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m.